he needed was somewhere that he could gather his thoughts. He swept his perception over the planet, finding it barren, and shook his head. With a stomp of his foot, the surrounding earth was smoothed out, becoming a plain of solid stone. Let's see. James ran a series of mental calculations, looking for the ideal configuration for the energies that he needed to fuse. He had the theory in his mind, and only needed to bring it into the real world now. Along the stone floor, lines began to carve themselves into the ground. These weren't fourth-tier spell diagrams, but rather third-tier. Although the popular belief was that higher-tier magic was undoubtedly better, the same result could often be achieved with a lower tier, unless you were reaching for the limits of complexity. 10, 50, 100, in a matter of 10 minutes, more than 300 spell diagrams were imprinted in the ground. Next, lines began to carve themselves, connecting these diagrams in a massive array as James stood at its heart. Each time a diagram was finished, his senses swept over it, ensuring that there weren't any problems with the engravings. "Now, let's sever this karma, shall we?" he spoke up with a smile, lifting one hand and snapping his fingers to activate the first of the spell diagrams.
"Dale, we need you back in the administration room now," Chelsea's voice called out to me as I was working on modifying my new summons. My eyes widened, startled by the sudden shout. Without delay, I immediately ascended to the admin room, finding Chelsea sat on the couch with an anxious expression. "Is it time?" I couldn't help but ask, and Chelsea nodded her head in confirmation. "He just set up a massive array of spells on an uninhabited planet. James knows that he won't be able to get what he wants the first try, so he made 50 separate experiments, all with slight modifications. With his expertise, there is an infinitely high chance that one of these 50 will produce the energy he wants." My lips twitched when I heard her words. Isn't he worried that the shockwaves of one failure would disrupt the others? To my surprise, Chelsea shook her head in denial. "This is James we're talking about. Part of the spell he set up will transfer the energy to another region if it doesn't meet the parameters he set. Although the spells were all created in the same area, there should be minimal interference between them." I gave a small nod at that, moving to sit down, and began purchasing the lifeless world that would serve as a sacrifice for James to destroy. The modifier for a lifeless world wasn't expensive at all, so this was only a drop in the bucket compared to what James had helped me earn through his many innovations. When a new world appeared in the void, there were bound to be those curious, wanting to check it out. It might even attract some void beasts, but there wasn't much that I could do about that. Even if someone identified the new world, they would most likely report it back to their superiors before making a move themselves. "As long as it's enough time for James to do his thing, it's fine," I muttered inwardly, turning my attention to the screen.
"Numbers 1 through 37 all failed at the early fusion stage," James thought to himself, caressing his chin. Having observed the fusion of energy via his world sight, he slightly adjusted the spell diagrams of the final set, issuing an order for the next batch to run. 38. Progress, but still a failure. Same with 39. 40. Looks like it's the James had almost given up on one of the spells when he saw an instability in the energy fusion, only to pull his attention back to it. 40 has stabilized. Was my karma trying to get me to overlook it by inducing the tremor? If that had happened, the failure would have been sent off into space. James focused more of his attention on this spell diagram, which became more steady after the initial tremor. First stage complete. Second stage fusion complete. His eyes widened, watching as the three energies began to integrate with one another. Although there were almost constant signs of rejection, it never exceeded the threshold that he had set. Karma is not meant to be controlled. Fate is ever-shifting. It makes sense that this energy is inclined to revolt before it settles. James lowered his stance, bracing himself. According to his calculations, this energy would have an extremely short period of stability after the spell had completed. In that period, James needed to rush forward and bind it to himself. The moment he sensed that the spell was completed,
his figure blurred, charging through the other active spells without a care. His body practically flashed to his target, blue light crackling over his frame as he grabbed the clear gem it had formed in his hand. As soon as he had touched it, the gem turned pitch black, an obvious sign that it had been bound to him. "Void, new world target, now!" Chell's voice echoed in James's mind once he'd obtained the energy. His eyes widened, stomping the ground to destroy the remaining spell diagrams, and then tore open a gate to the void. When James passed through the gate, he scanned the surroundings with his energy, cursing under his breath at how far away the new, undefended world was. He wanted to charge over, but found that his location was being locked onto by a large number of void beasts. "Looks like the dinner bell rang. I'd rather be off the menu." "Ignore them!" Chell ordered again, and four more figures appeared in the void around them. James instantly recognized these four, being none other than Chell, Thea, Nora, and Tracia. All four of them released their powers at once, launching a series of attacks at the charging void beasts. Tracia became a beacon of magic, prismatic beams of energy firing out to burn or freeze the void beasts. Thea and Nora stood side by side, a circular pattern forming around their bodies, composed of light and darkness. Any creatures that entered their range seemed to dissolve into nothing. As for Chell, she took a deep breath and released an ear-piercing scream into the void that staggered numerous beasts at once. James hesitated, realizing that this brief interference would taint their karma as well.
"Hurry up, you idiot! Deal with ours when you're done!"
Chell's mental cry snapped him out of his moment of hesitation, and he turned to charge at the new world. Although he had just obtained his new energy, he had countless speculations on how to use it. "First, issue an order to gather all negative karma at a single point between my fingers." He focused, holding one hand forward with his index and middle finger extended. A pitch-black light gathered between his fingers, and he knew that the energy was doing its job. Holding this energy, he flew to the new world, waiting until he was right outside of it. Only then did he slash his hand out, creating a black blade that tore through the void. And release! When Chell had yelled for him to come to this world, he knew what their plan was. The only surprise was that Chell and the others had personally appeared to block the beasts attacking him. He could have dealt with those beasts personally, but it would have taken some time. No, if I had fought them myself, I would have used this karmic blade, even if I lowered the output. Was she aiming to avoid that? James thought to himself, seeing the black blade create a massive gash in the shell around the world. Turning back, he found that the others were in an increasingly desperate battle. James held a hand out to manifest the gem he had created before, finding that it once again turned clear. Now that he didn't have the negative karma burdening him, the void beasts had instead been drawn to Chell and the others, who had shouldered a portion of the karma by helping him. He reached a hand out towards the four, adjusting his perception of space so as to let his hand wrap around them, even from this distance. They were startled before allowing themselves to be pulled to his side. Without a word, he focused on the gem, drawing in the negative karma from these four until the gem turned black once again. With that done, he fired off a second blade of negative karma into the already broken world, sending a helpless glance to Chell. "Was that strictly necessary?" Chell crossed her arms, rolling her eyes. "Karmic information, void clone. You tell me if it was necessary or not." James blinked before his eyes went wide. He hadn't thought about that. The fact that his karma contained all of his information. "So that's why you had him make this world for me to target." "Yep. Now, you going to deal with those guys or not?" she asked, jerking a thumb behind herself towards the void beasts that were charging after their escaped prey. James thought about it for a moment before his right eye turned pitch black. "I got this," he responded, a beam of energy shooting out and attacking the leading void beast, causing it to begin dissolving.
Chell watched with a wide smile as he dispatched the void beasts with the Eye of Ruin. Once the last one had fallen, she tore open a portal for them to leave through, one that connected back to their lab.
"It's a long time coming, but welcome home, boss," Nora grinned when she stepped through the portal. "Finally, no more malfunctions, no more getting sprayed or blasted in the face, no more randomly breaking systems. We can be a functioning institute again."
"How long was I gone?" James blinked, looking around. "I couldn't really grasp the passing of time. It's been at least a few years, right? And where are 350 and Sirius?"
"They ditched a decade in," Tracia shrugged her shoulders. "And you were gone about 30 years. It's about time we get back on track with our research, isn't it? All of our old projects were shredded to wipe out your name from the lab."
"Was it that bad?" he asked with wide eyes, to which all four girls nodded their heads.
"The perfection chambers on site broke one after another," Chelsea commented in a casual tone.
"The stored pilot bracers caused an energy storm that destroyed the warehouse."
Tracia grinned, the twins looking at each other mischievously before finishing, adding on,
"And the Divine Forge spawned a metal demigod out of nowhere that wanted to eat us."
When James heard that, he paused, lifting a hand to speak, but couldn't find the words.
Chapter 28.
Having James back in action was honestly a huge relief to me. If he had to play catch-up a bit with the research that he missed in the last few decades, I was confident that he would be up to the task. It may take him some time, but he would once again become the most famous researcher of Deccan. Leaning back in my seat, I directed my gaze to the world barrier of the lifeless world. The cracks along it were constantly expanding, and I was able to see for the first time the chaos that was unleashed on the dying world. Entire galaxies were fading from existence, planets and stars dissolving into darkness that spread across the cosmos. And leading the destruction were the two pitch-black attacks that James had launched, gradually diminishing as they tore through space. Outside, within the vast void, monsters arrived and began to claw at the gaps, feeding on the energy that was being leaked out of the dying world. Some of them even directly evolved on the spot, their bodies growing larger and more grotesque. In total, it took 6 hours for the world to be completely destroyed. However, when it had finished this process, I saw Leowyn appear on the screen confronting the army of void monsters. In her hand was a black sword with white specks that seemed to shimmer like starlight.
"Why is she there?" I asked aloud, my eyes widening. Moreover, I could see that Leowyn's expression was extremely serious. She swung her sword, actively utilizing the absurdity of fate style to slash at her opponents. From what I could see, this style was especially effective when fighting in the void. Every now and then her body became a blur, accelerating to dodge the bites, claws, and tendrils of the void monsters. Whenever she appeared again, one of the creatures would be cut in half. Compared to when she first fought the wave shark void monster, she was now able to release far more strength with less effort. Watching her body blur back and forth between the monster army, part of me felt that this was a demonstration, as if she knew that I was watching and wanted to show me what a void battle really looked like. That, however, was only a small feeling, and I knew that there had to be more to it than that. Next to me, Chell shook her head in confusion, also unsure why Leowyn was fighting so desperately to eliminate these monsters. The two of us watched the scene, trying to guess her motives every time she cleaved off a monster's head or crushed one with a backward swing. When she had slain the last of the void monsters, she looked around and waved her hand, causing a brief disturbance in the void, as if she had dispersed something that was lingering in that place. Only then did she disappear, and we heard a relieved sigh coming from behind us. I turned around, looking at Leowyn, and arched a brow.
"Mind explaining that?" I asked,
and Leoin blinked in surprise.
Ah, you were watching? I thought you would have focused on James after they left, she said with a faint chuckle, before walking around the couch to sit down next to me.
Okay, so it wasn't a show, I thought to myself, keeping my eyes focused on her and waiting for an explanation. Leoin simply shrugged her shoulders, as if there was nothing to keep secret.
I was monitoring the structure of those void beasts as they ate the collapsing world. This was the first time that it happened, so I wanted to make sure that I witnessed the full process, as goddess of the void. What I saw was most of those void beasts obtained a specific modifier to their rules. This modifier could be summoned as Apocalypse. In one way or another, their powers had grown to the point that they would be able to threaten the existence of whatever world they attached themselves to. Chell and I immediately looked at one another in surprise, finding the description strikingly familiar.
So, that's how Ragnarokr cultivates his void monsters. He has them feast on dying worlds?
Leoin blinked again before nodding her head.
It's possible. Some of them also obtained other modifiers from that world, such as basic geometric magic or lifeless. With those, it depended more on compatibility than anything else. From my observation, a void monster that participates in the destruction of a world will gain the Apocalypse modifier, as I called it. They may also obtain special features of that world as modifiers to their rules. To use a historic example, if the Water Shark from back then had the lifeless rule, it could eliminate all life that existed within water. All fish in every planet, even the Merkin, would die at the same time because they were touched by this rule. Combining that with the Apocalypse modifier, and it would extend to weather patterns. Anything, plant or animal, touched by snow or rain, would similarly fall dead. I couldn't help but shudder when I heard that. Okay. No more making worlds like that anymore.
But wait, Chelsea held up a hand. What about all of those worlds that got destroyed by the void generator tests?
Leoin had a small smile on her face, shaking her head.
James was careful. As part of the experiments, he made sure that the worlds spawned at preset coordinates, where they would be enveloped by already established void shields. Because of this, void beasts weren't able to take advantage of the moment when the worlds were destroyed. Otherwise, it is entirely possible that one might have feasted on the concept of your void generator, granting them a limitless reserve of energy.
Noted, Chell nodded her head slightly, though a moment later she blinked, suddenly turning to look at me.
We're idiots.
Huh? I replied, quite intelligently.
We're idiots.
That new vote that went through recently, you could assign a fund to me, and I could create lifeless worlds like that one to use for the void generators.
I couldn't help but blink in surprise at this idea. It sounded like it could work. Back when those experiments had begun, we hadn't even considered the idea of a lifeless world yet.
Is it still a necessary concern? I asked, glancing back to the screen, hesitant after hearing the potential dangers.
Chell seemed to catch my meaning and nodded her head. If one of those generators malfunctions in the future, we'll be back in this mess all over again. James has the energy to get rid of karma now, but we'll still need to create another lifeless world for him to break. If the world is already lifeless, though, there is no risk even with a critical failure. In my opinion, it would be better to safely decommission the current generators and re-establish them in lifeless worlds where there is no risk of a negative karma backlash, especially because, at this point, most people in the various worlds are benefiting from the energy provided by these generators. If there was a karmic backlash, it wouldn't just target James this time.
Well, that was certainly enough to convince me. I nodded my head, thinking about the subject as well.
If I give you these funds, would you be able to create custom-built worlds to increase the productivity of the generator? For instance, something like an amplified energy modifier that increased the conversion rates of energies?
Chell blinked, but shook her head a moment later.
I won't know that until I know how many points I have for my funds, and get the chance to look at the market. I glanced over at my current balance and created a new companion account for Chell with 50,000 points in it. This was a large sum, enough that it made her eyes go wide. But at the same time, this would solve a lot of our future problems. This isn't just for creating these worlds. This is your research fund. If you need any new technologies, you can pull from this fund. If you want, you can even create a world to act as a manufacturing point for your research group. Chell nodded her head firmly, clenching her fists as she heard that. All right, I'll do my best. James was in the midst of tidying up his office, sweeping away all the dust that had gathered, when Chelsea suddenly threw open the door, startling him. "Is everything okay, Chell?" he asked, in alarm, looking at the petite kitsune. "You need to send the deactivation signal to the new void generators," Chell said, in a firm tone, surprising James even further. Because it was tied to his karma, James had never given control of the generators to anyone else. Only he had the power to decommission the power plants.
"I can do that, but can I ask why? I checked when I got here, and they were still functioning normally."
In truth, James had been worried that those generators would have gone critical thanks to his karma. But Chell had explained that the system's spheres could temporarily wipe karmic bonds like that, as long as new bonds weren't established. Each generator was encapsulated by one of these spheres that activated upon its launch, so the karmic bond with James was severed immediately. They just had to be careful not to directly link the generators to James himself. For that reason, they announced that the generators were jointly created by a number of unspecified research facilities. "Because I'm not interested in Karmic Black, the sequel," Chell said, narrowing her eyes. "The Keeper just gave me authorization to make more lifeless worlds. I'm going to look at the options on the market to make one for us, and we're going to make the void shielding. After that, we'll start constructing the void generator. If we need more, I'll make more." This time, James's eyes went wide. "How many points did it give you?"
"Enough," she answered simply, a smug grin on her face. "Now, are we going to send that signal or not?"
"Wait," James held up a hand. "We can start decommissioning the old generators when the new ones are built. Otherwise, there will be a universal power shortage that could last months while we catch up. Also, I thought system companions couldn't manage their own worlds." Chell rolled her eyes, her grin growing wider.
"Perks of not being one anymore. My administration room self is looking through the options now. The Keeper suggested adding in systems that would amplify energy generation, so we might be able to get away with just one or two generators. The rest of the money is for personal use. I can make a size zero world for us and set it up to be our personal manufacturing lab or testing ground."
James had always wanted a personal world for manufacturing needs, never satisfied with the old bases salvaged from sanctions invasion. Hearing that his wish was finally coming true, he quickly nodded his head.
"He really did give you a lot. All right, you make the world, and once our generator is up and running, I'll shut down the old ones."
Chell nodded her head firmly before blinking.
"Well, that'll do."
Seeing James showing a confused expression, Chell curled her lips again.
"Unsurprisingly, we're not the first ones to need to use a world for this. My other self just found a package of energy conversion modifiers. Each one costs 1,000 points and can increase the energy conversion efficiency from one energy type to another. For instance, from mundane energy like electrical or solar to mana, or from mana to ki, or from void to mana." Chelsea's eyes were slightly unfocused, her attention diverted to her admin room self. "For double efficiency, it's 100 points per modifier in the package. For 5 times efficiency, it's 1,000 points. 10 times, it's 10,000 points. James hesitated before nodding his head.
"If we get 10 void-to-mana conversion options at a 5 times modifier, that will be more than enough to replace our current energy production, assuming that this would count for the world created by our generators. Chell blinked before nodding briefly. I'll get a double efficiency modifier first to test that. If it works, we'll use the bigger ones, she suggested, to which James readily agreed. Chapter 29.
All right, soldiers, Dana shouted, standing before the 10 creations of the Keeper.
She wasn't in one of the Olympus training rooms, but rather stood with them in a large field.
You all were given life by the boss, created to master a particular style of combat. You were given intelligence to train on your own and develop your own techniques in these styles. You were given the freedom to move around and act independently. Many eons aren't given such beneficial treatment.
Are we eons? The blue-haired woman among the group asked, tilting her head at the unfamiliar word. Dana turned, pointing sharply at her and causing her to flinch back.
Yes! At your core, you are fundamentally eons. Creatures that were summoned by another being for one purpose or another with the combination of mana and spiritual energy. However, you are also more than that. You are the creations of a special technique known as the Beasts of the End. Originally, there were meant to be 12 of you. However, aside from you 10, the Keeper only has one other, and the final one is still being planned. Now, today I am going to go over basic combat styles that can apply to all eons. These are techniques that I have learned over a very, very long life. I was reborn in an ancient elven city to an ailing father. When he was taken from me, I fought to get him back. I marched into the depths of hell, and I conquered it in order to find him again. Dana paused, closing her eyes and letting out a deep breath. I never found him. By the time I knew that I was in the wrong place, he surely would have been reborn as a new soul. However, someone else found me. Suba. She took me in and gave me a home. Dana opened her eyes, a fierce light shining from within them. This is my home now. If it's your job to defend it, then you had better believe that I am not going to let you slack off. Unlike all of you, I was created with special powers. I was pieced together from the soul of a young girl who died of illness. Everything I have, I fought for, I earned. I'll be paying special attention to the two of you, Dana said, pointing at the jester and the woman in an Asian dress. You were created with the express intention of mastering your arts, and I myself am an expert of the techniques you focus on. But first, general combat skills. Every eon with enough intelligence to act independently has the potential to borrow spiritual energy from the underworld. I have already gotten permission from the Keeper to take you all to hell. If you can't handle it, you don't deserve the powers you've been given. Dana lifted a hand, purposely slowing the process as a familiar spell diagram appeared above her, forming a black abyss in the sky, filled with rolling silver fog. All of you, enter. It's time to begin basic training. Unless I give you permission, you are not to use the styles you have been training until now. The 10 eons had serious expressions, at least those who had a visible face. One by one they flew up to enter the portal that Dana had created, Dana herself passing through moments later before closing the portal behind herself. Eons were not the same as avatars created by the Keeper, or copies made from the virtual world. Even if he went to the admin room, so long as the eons were given the ability to act independently, they would function thanks to his world host. This was something that Dana had confirmed when she found out that Dale had hastily returned to the admin room previously and found that they were still training, unaware that their creator had left. Now she was going to take advantage of that fact. Let's see. This spot should be good, right? Aurevi asked, glancing back at Julia as they arrived at a rocky plateau, having moved to an uninhabited world.
Julia gave a wry smile, shrugging her shoulders. It's certainly not your usual choice of location for a date. If you'd tell me what we're here for, I might have more confidence in answering you.
Aurevi simply grinned, snapping her fingers as an orb of darkness rose from her shadow, hovering in the air.
It's one of my research projects. I've been thinking about it for a long time, but never really came up with an answer.
Julia arched a brow, glancing at the orb. She could sense Aurevy using natural energy to control her shadow. A rather advanced technique for a druid, but not unheard of.
This is just a representation. This shadow orb represents the void. The void, as you know, is the source of everything, whether it is energy or creation.
Aurevy lifted her other hand and four streams of energy flew out of her body, forming spheres, one green, one silver, one blue, and one red. These are the four basic energy types, natural, spiritual, mana, and ki. Julia simply nodded, following along so far.
Aurevy meanwhile looked at the energies. We know that you can directly turn the void into mana, because that is the source of the void generators. However, you can also do the same with other primary energies. This led me to a question. Which energies have a higher priority?
The four spheres went to orbit around the black orb, and Aurevy smiled.
The first theory is that they are all equal when pulled from the void. After all, it makes everything, so why would it differentiate? The second theory, the void sphere rose up, with the green and white spheres resting just under it, and the red and blue ones just under those, is that the void first gives birth to either nature and spirit, or form and thought, and the other two are then derived from the first.
Okay, where is this going? Julia arched a brow, not sure what this had to do with anything.
I'm getting there, okay?
Aurevy stuck her tongue out.
No matter which way I thought about it, whether they were equal or there was a hierarchy, there was always something bothering me. When the martial will appeared in the world, this only became worse and worse. Now, let's go over the basic energy combinations. First, you have mana and ki, which is the most simple, and makes chakra. Because this is the easiest combination, let's put these two adjacent to one another.
She nodded her head, rearranging the order of the orbiting spheres.
Now, given the complexity and power of martial will, let's put spiritual energy opposite of ki. This also shows that eons are rather easy to create, due to mana and spirit being next to one another, as well as elemental ki, due to ki and elemental energy. World spirits are a bit tricky, but nowhere near the degree of a complete martial spirit. As she spoke, she drew lines between each of the orbs, with the line connecting ki and spiritual energy overlapping the void orb. This diagram can be made with the hierarchy as well, and the simple combinations are still adjacent.
You didn't mention elemental magic, Julia pointed out, crossing her arms in front of her chest. I'm guessing that's intentional, right?
Yep, see? If the combination of ki and spirit can lead to something as powerful as martial will, you'd think that the other two energies would combine to form something just as powerful, right? But elemental magic can't be considered as powerful as that. So I kept thinking that we hadn't really uncovered the potential of elemental magic, like how ki and spirit originally just made martial spirits.
Julia blinked at that, looking around. So you brought us to this desolate world, wanting to try and perfect elemental magic?
Got it in one, Aurevy grinned, planting her hands on her hips. I figure there has to be some secret to elemental magic that we hadn't discovered yet. Maybe it can be used to create a powerful saint energy. Maybe elemental magic itself can be used at that level. That's the purpose of today's experiment. And if everything goes critical, oops, at least it's just an uninhabited rock.
Uh-huh. Julia's shoulders sagged slightly. If you want to test the full scale of elemental magic like that, wouldn't Rion be a better helper? Like how Scarlet used her domain for ki? Rion could do the same for mana.
Aurevy glanced off to the side, chuckling slightly. I wanted to surprise Rion. She's always busy trying to crack fifth-tier magic, so I wanted to show her this as a surprise if it worked. If it didn't, I'd just tell her later.
Julia simply rolled her eyes.
All right. What do you need my help with? She asked, a small grin on her lips.
Aurevy's own grin grew wider and wider.
An audience! Also someone to bounce ideas off of. My first thought is to construct an elemental magic spell diagram completely out of natural energy.
Won't work, Julia said simply, holding up a hand to stop her. Tons of people have tried that before. Hell, I've tried that before. If anything, the effect is a bit worse than normal elemental magic.
Aurevie's brow twitched, clearing her throat.
The next idea. Scarlet used a lot of ki, so why not try using a lot of mana?
And that is why I said we needed Rion, Julia said with an amused smile.
Well, I've got this.
Aurevie waved her hand, depositing several large crates from her inventory.
I've been stocking up on mage heart crystals for about 10 years, so it should be enough.
Julia's eyes widened, immediately retreating a few steps.
You're not worried about causing a mana siphon?
Well, that's part of why we needed an uninhabited world, Aurevie said, somewhat sheepishly. If a mana siphon is created here, it will only be based on the thoughts of the two of us. I even got a spell diagram that should be able to support all of the energy.
Wait.
Julia extended a hand to stop Aurevie again.
If you want to test it in this direction, you need a directionless spell, and then use natural energy to focus it. Otherwise, you are just adding an elemental effect to a powerful spell.
That's not wrong, Aurevie chuckled sheepishly. That was going to be my fifth test.
How many tests do you have planned?
Aurevie glanced from side to side, speaking slowly.
82?
80? Julia's eyes went wide, almost stumbling back at that.
You have been saving this up for so long that you have 82 tests prepared, and the materials for all of them? Is your inventory filled with Mage Heart?
Only like 95% of it. I needed some room for other materials, too. Like I said, I've been saving up the crystals for about 10 years,
Aurevie snickered, looking back at the crates.
Okay. Well, let's just start off with this fifth test, then.
Julia shook her head with a long sigh, massaging her forehead. If that doesn't work, we'll just go from there, or find the next planet to test on.
How many planets do you have prepared?
10,
Aurevie shouted in a confident tone.
I figure it can't take less than 8 or 9 failed attempts to destroy a planet, right?
Chapter 30. Julia helped Aurevie arrange the boxes of Mage Heart carefully, being mindful of the faint energy leakage from each crystal. Immediately she could feel the intense mana contained in the formation that they were establishing, but this was something that she had to consider normal under the circumstances.
Just to be clear, what is your goal with this experiment?
Julia asked again as they were emptying the final box.
To find a new avenue of development, or an ultimate ability for elementalists,
Aurevie responded. After a moment of consideration, Julia simply nodded.
If it's development, we'll need to try less resource-intensive options. After all, not everyone is going to be able to acquire what took you years to prepare. But this could work as an ultimate technique.
Aurevie quickly nodded her head, stepping back once the gems had all been arranged and gesturing for Julia.
Well, go on. Give it a shot.
Julia blinked in confusion, staring at Aurevie, who eventually explained,
You're practically a nature goddess already, right? It's only natural that you have a higher affinity with natural energy than I do.
Julia let out a drawn-out sigh, shaking her head and stepping forward. With the intention of using this as an ultimate technique, she had to think about her desires carefully. What sort of technique did she want to create? Did she want a blast of immense power, an army of wooden soldiers, or something else? Thinking about the nature of elemental magic, Julia tilted her head slightly, holding one hand out. She connected her mana with that being released by the Mage Heart and formed it into a solid sphere. This would be the basis for a blank fourth-tier spell. She did not begin with the usual opening for an elementalist, declaring their identity to the natural energy of the world,
Instead, this was an experiment to subvert the old methods. Fire and stone as the foundation, water and wind as the guide. Gather, converge. Light and shadow bear witness. Twist, mold. The eternal wood bears fruit. Split, divide, fold within space, and bind in my hand. As Julia spoke, green lights rushed into the sphere of mana from the surroundings, and almost runic markings began to engrave themselves along the outer edge of the sphere. The gems beneath the spell shook, some of them cracking as their energies began to exhaust, while the wind roared through the barren plateau. Take root, the mighty force of nature. Spread unto the sky and devour the stars. Become shield and salvation. Become sword and spear. I bind you with the name Eternal Rampart. Julia stretched one arm out to the side, pulling back her sleeve as Aurevi watched in confusion. The spell that Julia was creating seemed to shatter, streams of blue and green energy rushing at her arm. She let out a hiss of pain, clenching her fist tight as the energy seemed to carve itself into her body. Under Aurevi's shocked gaze, a pattern began to appear, showing a dark tree extending up her arm, its branches twisting and wrapping around her flesh. At the end of each branch was a small orb that seemed to move faintly as she observed it. When the engraving was finished, Julia let out a gasp of relief, falling to her knees. Aurevi rushed over to catch and support her, speaking in a worried tone.
You know, when I was setting this up, I didn't think that you were going to use it for a fancy tattoo. Is that...
Julia took a moment to catch her breath before responding with a nod.
Fior, runic elemental magic is fundamentally different from how we have always treated geometric elemental magic. When I was thinking about what to do here, I thought that didn't make much sense. Although geometric and runic magic have a different mechanism for activation, they're not so fundamentally different from one another.
So, you made an elemental weapon? As a tree?
Aurevi asked in confusion, but Julia shook her head.
Not a weapon, a bound spell. If it works as I hoped, it will cast the spell whenever I activate it, and then absorb mana to refuel.
And if it doesn't?
The halfling goddess asked with an arched brow.
Then it will be a cool tattoo?
Julia responded with a faint chuckle, pulling herself to her feet.
You wanted another way for elementalists to advance. An elementalist's greatest weakness is that they have to perform a long chant to cast their magic. Even high-powered mages can have methods of simplifying their spell casts. So, she held her hand forward again.
Eternal Rampart.
One of the small orbs on the tattoo faded away, leaving a faintly red spot. At the same time, the ground cracked in front of Julia, natural energy surging. A small tree rose up from the cracked soil, before surging up towards the sky, growing larger and larger with every passing moment. Its roots twisted, forming spears that shot out of the ground, while its branches seemed to stab into the sky. Julia nodded her head, looking at the tree that had been formed by her spell. She looked at the red spot in her arm again, which was gradually fading. In my case, it looks like every fruit on the marking represents one time that I can use it. We'll need to see whether it needs to be manually replenished, or if it will do so on its own. Aurevi nodded her head, deep in thought.
Being able to create bound spells like this will definitely increase the utility of an elementalist. Currently, the only way to do a bound spell is through high-level runic magic. It's not strange for a mage of Fior beyond a certain level to have a dozen spells bound to them at a time.
Julia smiled, pulling her sleeve back down.
So, what are you going to do with the rest of the mage heart you have stocked up?
Aurevi paused, hesitant. She hadn't expected to get a positive result so soon, so she hadn't considered this point.
We shall
continue the experiment. Who knows if there are other methods to improve elemental magic?
Her eyes shifted from side to side as she said that, causing Julia to chuckle.
You just don't want to waste the resources, she said in a knowing tone, shaking her head helplessly.
Inside the more unsavory half of the underworld, Dana crossed her arms, watching with narrowed eyes as the creations of the Keeper struggled against the surging spiritual monsters. This was their first practical combat exercise, and they were forbidden from using their main techniques, so she shouldn't have expected too much. But it had to be remembered that these creatures were created specifically for combat. "Spiritual energy is all around you," she shouted at them. "It can be shaped and molded into whatever form you want. It can be a weapon, a shield. You can even directly rip your enemies apart." To her surprise, the first to improve was not the jester, designed for the spiritual energy art, but rather the scholar, made to master the absurdity of fate. He held a hand out, spiritual energy gathering and forming a massive sword that slashed through three enemies with every swing. Dana had to narrow her eyes further to make sure that he wasn't secretly using his special techniques. "Is this necessary?" A voice spoke up in Dana's mind, causing her to glance off to the side. It was quite a distance away, but she felt a pressure similar to her own. "A new monarch has risen here?" Dana responded to the voice in her mind, earning a soft sigh. "There are more than 100 monarchs in total. You just happen to be in my territory." "I see," Dana nodded her head. "In that case, I apologize. I don't mean any offense by my intrusion. These warriors need practical training. Don't worry, we have no intention of absorbing their souls. So you can reclaim their energy for your territory when we leave." This tone. "I see, so you are the lost child. It has been quite some time since we last found your traces." The voice spoke again after a moment's hesitation. "Very well. I have no desire to provoke a war over these beasts. We are aware of whom the lost child swears fealty to." That actually surprised Dana, causing her eyes to widen slightly. "You all have connections in the living world?" A deep chuckle sounded in the depths of her mind. "That's right. There are many who look up to us as ghost kings. We send a piece of ourselves to them, and they think that they control our main bodies. Through this connection, we can learn many things from the living." Dana pursed her lips in thought, offering only a brief nod. "In that case, would you like to cooperate with me?"
"What sort of cooperation do you propose, lost child?" the unfamiliar monarch asked in interest.
"I want to increase the pressure on these soldiers and force them to adapt. You should have plenty of disposable spirits in your territory, right?" Hearing Dana's suggestion, the monarch seemed to consider it for a long moment.
"And what benefit will this bring me?"
This time it was Dana's turn to consider what she had to exchange. What resources would a monarch of hell want in exchange for some disposable soldiers?
"I can owe you a small favor. By my spirit, I can pledge to perform one act of equal value to the help you give me."
A favor from the Keeper's lost child? There was another pause. "Very well. I shall arrange the beasts."
Dana offered a nod, turning her focus back to the eons summoned by the Keeper. Their training was about to get a lot more intense, causing her lips to tug up at the corners.
"Don't absorb the spirits of the creatures you kill. Their stray thoughts could contaminate you. If you need to replenish your energy, only absorb the peaceful energy in the surroundings. Fireball, you should be able to create spikes from spiritual energy. Why are you only throwing out weak blasts like that? Sage, don't just hide in your turtle shell. Jester, why are you suddenly crying? The real training is only just beginning."
At Dana's words, the 10 eons looked into the distance, able to feel a wave of enemies approaching. They grit their teeth, lashing out with renewed vigor.
"Don't shame the name of the Keeper. You were all created to be his personal units. Each of you should be able to handle an entire wave like this yourselves."
"So, you are saying that you are strong enough to do so?" The armored soldier turned to look at her, seemingly in interest.
Dana rolled her eyes, briefly messaging the other monarch.
"Looks like I need to do a demonstration. Feel free to put extra pressure on the one in red armor. After she sent that message, she lifted one hand, lightly spinning a finger in the air. A silver circle followed the path of her finger, furiously absorbing the energy in the atmosphere to grow larger and larger. When she flicked her finger forward, the growing circle launched ahead, slicing apart more than half of the approaching wave.
Yes,
she looked at the soldier, answering simply. Right now, the 10 of you combined aren't even enough to make me get serious. By the time we're done, I want this to change.
Chapter 31.
While the other inhabitants of Olympus were busy handling their own preparations, there was more work for none other than the local chef, Asnod. He stood within the void, stroking his chin in thought as he looked at the endless red and black abyss.
Something bothering you? Udana asked, curiously,
appearing next to Asnod with her arms crossed behind her back. Asnod hesitated, but soon shook his head.
It is not strictly bothering me. Rather, I am thinking about how I can improve myself to prepare for what is to come.
Given that you came out here, does that mean that you are considering how to fight in the void as well?
Yes and no. Asnod shook his head. My method of fighting has always relied around techniques derived from the culinary arts, whether it is my knife technique, the flames that I use, or even the energy I created long ago. All of it stems from the concept of cooking. But the void is an ingredient that I don't think I can fully comprehend.
What do you mean?
Udana blinked, turning to fully face Asnod.
The void is everything and nothing. There are an infinite number of ways that one may alter it in order to achieve a desired effect. Entire worlds can be seen as no more than a marvelous dish created from this primordial soup.
A bad case of choice paralysis? Udana asked with a teasing smile. Asnod hesitated, but ultimately nodded his head.
That could be the case. The void can be seen to be the ultimate ingredient, but it is directionless. Without having any traits of its own, there are too many paths to choose.
Udana brought one hand up, tapping a finger against her chin.
If it's a wild card, then isn't the answer simple?
When Asnod sent a questioning gaze to her, Udana smiled brightly. You have an ingredient that could answer any question, and thus can't decide what to do with it. So, work from the other direction. Decide your end goal first. Why do you want to manipulate the void? What do you want to do with it?
These are the questions that you need to answer in order to find your direction. As you said, the void is a realm of infinite possibilities. Everyone has their own method to using it.
Oh? Asnod blinked slowly. If I may ask, what is your method?
That's simple, Udana snickered, snapping her fingers. The void around them shifted into a green aura that radiated nearly a dozen meters. I am the goddess of life. My primary use of the void is to heal people, though I can also use it as a medium to store and transmit information. But that is risky. If the information is not secured properly, it could transform into a void beast. A void beast containing the information that I felt the need to secure is likely bound to be a dangerous one.
Right. Asnod nodded his head,
before sinking deeper into his thoughts. Void beasts are just a collection of rules and information within the void, are they not?
That's right.
Udana tilted her head, not entirely sure what Asnod was on about right now.
Is something the matter with that?
Well, why do void beasts attack inhabited worlds? They can gain information from them, but the void is information itself. Could they not simply feed on the ambient atmosphere here?
Ah, so that's what this was about.
Udana gave a small nod. That's right. It's entirely possible for a void beast to sustain themselves simply by breathing in the void. However, in order for them to evolve, they must devour more refined information. This information can come from four sources. First, there are the worlds within the void.
These worlds are the most refined form of information that the void can produce, so it is naturally the greatest nutrition for these beasts. Secondly, there are the people that come from the worlds and enter the void. The information that they contain is far less compressed, and thus less appetizing, but it is still nutrition.
Third, you have the sanctuary of a fallen god. These are miniature realms that the fallen gods produce within the void as the source of their power. If a void beast devours one, they have a chance of obtaining the corresponding information from that fallen god's domain. However, to do so, they must first defeat the fallen god that controls the sanctuary, which makes it far more dangerous than simply attaching to a world. And the last option, as not interrupted suddenly, is devouring other void beasts, correct?
Udana nodded her head in agreement at that.
That's right. Void beasts can cannibalize one another. Doing so has a chance to impart some of the slain beast's information on the one that killed it. This was what caused the incident with the Guardian so long ago, because it had been fighting void beasts for so long that the information ultimately corrupted it from within. Asnod pinched his chin, looking at the distant void beasts roaming the void. It was hard to see them clearly, as many of them had the void wrapped around their bodies. Aside from Lady Leowen, has anyone ever purposely created a void beast? Udana's brow twitched, and she had to think about that, checking the records through the admin room.
There have been some cases. However, the rules that they used were either too simple, or the beast simply turned on them.
I see. Asnod nodded his head, taking a deep breath. Udana glanced over, seeing a black flame produced between his hands.
Asnod, what are you doing? She asked, her tone suddenly shifting to one of worry.
I am a chef, my lady. Asnod gave a rare, teasing smile. I am doing what a chef must do, and preparing to cook.
You decided on what you want to use the void for? She asked in surprise, to which Asnod nodded his head.
I have an idea. But first, there are steps that must be done. I need to prepare.
As he said that, he focused, activating his three domains of cooking, preparation, and optimization. He often did this when he needed a hit of guidance. Now that he did so in the void, he could feel his latter two domains resonating with the void.
I see. Everything that could ever be stems from the void. Although I wasn't aware of it, it seems that my powers are slightly tied to this place, or at the very least, they use the void as a route to simulate an answer to my questions.
While Asnod pondered this, a plan took shape in his mind. His black flame stirred, devouring the ambient energy of the void as it spread. A single grain of sand within the void can represent a massive planet. How much energy would it take to sate a beast's appetite? Surely more than one such grain. Udana hesitated, unsure if she was being spoke to or if he was merely musing aloud. Still, she decided to answer in the end.
That's right. Whenever we see a void beast appearing on Earth or any other world, it is also appearing on countless other worlds. Anywhere that meets the conditions for its rules is a target. There could be billions of planets feeding any particular void beast.
When Asnod heard this, he smiled. In that case, I suppose it is a good thing that the void is a realm of endless possibilities. His eyes went focused, staring into the depths of the black flame in front of him. He was using the void itself as an ingredient, bestowing it with the information he needed to achieve his goals. Now that he had a plan in mind, the preparation of this ingredient could be handled purely via his saint energy. After roughly 20 seconds, he reached his hand into the black flame and retrieved a circular blue object that shone with a faint light.
What is that? Udana asked, eyes fixated on the item.
She knew better than to think that something Asnod cooked with the void as an ingredient would be simple.
It's feed, he answered simply, passing it to her. Would you mind helping me deliver this to that void beast over there?
Asnod gestured towards a shifting mass of void that seemed to be hovering outside of Lorik's barrier. Udana paused, not sure what his intentions were. Still, she took the feed and flew towards the void beast. When it saw her, it let out a roar of warning. The aura of the void dispersed around it, revealing the body of a bull with spikes jutting out all over its body. At a glance, Udonna couldn't even begin to guess what the rules this being embodied were. She simply ignored its roar, throwing the circular item in her hand at it. The bull seemed wary at first, its eyes tracking the strange projectile, before it seemed to be drawn in. It opened its mouth and bit heavily at the blue treat. Immediately, its eyes lit up and its body convulsed. The spikes lining its frame shifted, curving along its skin, to form what seemed to be almost a layer of bone armor. Udonna was startled to discover that she had just assisted in the evolution of a void beast, mentally preparing herself for battle. Sure enough, the void beast let out another roar, running towards her. Clenching her teeth, Udonna was prepared to use her domain offensively to deprive the bull of life before... Suddenly, the creature slowed down, coming to a stop right before Udonna. Its eyes were incomparably gentle, and it lowered its head to sniff at the hand she had used to throw the feed. As if hoping there were more, it nudged her hand slightly, causing Udonna to turn and look back at Asnod. "What did I just give this thing?" she asked, gulping slightly. Despite the lack of more food, the bull didn't seem to want to fight her, rather choosing to wait next to her as if hoping she will produce more. "As you said, the void beasts require concentrated information," Asnod smiled. "The reason why there is only a chance for information to be passed on should be due to how diluted the information that they consume is. The more concentrated a single piece of information, the more likely it is to be passed on. In that feed just now, I focused on the following pieces of information. Do not attack others, as long as they do not first show hostility to you or your allies. Do not consume other sources of information, aside from those provided in this format." These two rules were refined with the void, layered again and again, while any irrelevant information was discarded.
"You mean to say you domesticated it?" Udonna blinked, looking at the void beast as she walked towards Asnod, the creature following her.
"That's correct," Asnod confirmed readily. "I believe that the best use of my talents in the void is to start a pasture of void beasts. There is a high chance that they will become useful in the future."
"A pasture?" Udonna's eyes couldn't help but widen.
"You're wanting to farm void beasts?"
"Quite. Once they are sufficiently raised, their beings should prove to be quite the interesting ingredient." Asnod spoke without the slightest reservation, and Udonna was thankful that the bull did not seem to understand them. "If I modify the contents of the feed over time, I will likely be able to produce varied life forms, which will provide me with even more materials in the future."
Udonna simply watched, her jaw slack at what she was hearing. She had never heard of anyone treating the void beasts, creatures regarded as the potential destroyers of civilization, as farm animals.
"Only you would want something like this. Still, if that's the direction you've chosen, I'll support you."
Chapter 32. Now that James was back in business, I had high hopes for the defenses shaping up in the void. Unfortunately, they weren't quite there yet, and I didn't want to risk my worlds being completely obliterated in the next invasion. As things stood, that was still a very real possibility. I was still undergoing my weekly training with Leowen, together with Tsubaki, to make sure that both of us were fully adapted to fighting in the void. Similarly, my summons had been with Dana to gain practical combat experience. However, with the need for further advancement in technology, I had to fast-forward time once again. After notifying the others in Olympus, I left for the admin room. Unsurprisingly, Tsubaki came with me, though Dana said that she wanted to stay and continue to train my summons. The idea that Dana wanted to stay in the world for years without Tsubaki present, now that did surprise me. Regardless, I had to get this taken care of, or my worlds would be at serious risk of being destroyed in the coming days. If at any point Dana decided to come to the admin room, she would be more than capable of doing so, even if the world was being fast-forwarded still. As one last precaution, I set a number of alarms to track different technologies, and made sure that Leowen and the others were all prepared to gradually increase people's awareness. With these preparations in place, it was time to get everything moving. Ashley strode towards the office building across the street from the main admin room house, quickly making her way inside. She had just heard about Chell's new world plan, and felt the rather urgent need to mention it to her team. When she arrived in the offices, she found that only about two-thirds of the workers were present, with the rest no doubt taking a well-earned vacation.
"Jamira, I have a new project that I want you to assign to someone," Ashley called out, her team leader jumping to her feet and running over.
"What work do you have for us, miss?" Jamira asked excitedly, as Ashley's personal presence meant that it was something important, either a new system that she wanted to develop, or something had changed that they needed to reproduce.
"There's a new world that would have just been created. It was built with the feature of doubling the efficiency of energy conversion between void and mana. I want the team to dissect this feature. This is a conversion process of one of the four basic energies, and it could very well be an important step to developing our own world."
Jamira's eyes widened when she heard that, nodding her head repeatedly.
"Of course! I'll get everyone on it right away."
Ashley nodded her head, smiling slightly.
"Good. Once you have the code broken down, I have a couple of side projects that I want you to work on. First, see if you can find a way to apply this code to other energy conversions or increase the effectiveness. Secondly, I want you to create an admin account for the digital conversion system. Tie in the energy conversion process to the account, so that those who have access will have their mana costs waived when they use digital conversion." Jamira's gaze shook when she heard that.
Of course! She knew what Ashley meant by these two projects. With the first, they could potentially automate the creation of any energy type, making the fundamental pillars of a world. With the second, they could allow the admins of the digital conversion system to create anything they wanted to, at no cost, as long as it had been previously scanned. Even if only one of the two projects were successful, it could be a major help in terms of utility. Satisfied, Ashley nodded her head, getting ready to leave.
"Oh, are there any new independent projects that anyone has been working on to report?"
Jamira thought it over for a moment.
"Sorin has been studying Lorik's time acceleration, and said he has created a system that would allow such time accelerations to be crafted on a small scale. It's more effective than the current time acceleration that most mages can craft, but it is more costly, so he said that it was a failure."
Ashley blinked, glancing at one of the members of her team.
"Does that mean that he created a crafting system?" she asked, curiously, causing Jamira to hesitate before nodding her head.
"That's right. He registered the end product as a file with the digital conversion system, and then made a plug-in that would let you substitute the energy cost with the related materials. It's similar to the plug-in we made before that lets you exchange the materials of an item. In doing so, as long as you have all of the necessary materials on hand, the crafting process is free and instant."
Ashley lowered her head in thought when she heard the explanation. This process made sense from her perspective. As long as a craftsman created an object once, they could register it with the system, and then could instantly craft it again with the required materials.
The works created instantly like this would have all of the benefits or defects of the original work, and the only way to improve the design would be to make it from scratch again and register it once more. Additionally, the patent system made it so that files could be sold but not pirated. This would increase the likelihood of crafters coming together into unions or guilds.
"Prepare the crafting plug-in. I'll go tell the Keeper about it now, and we should be able to include it in our next major patch."
"My Keeper, there is something that I have been wondering about for quite some time. While we have the chance to talk normally, I was wondering if you would be able to provide an answer for me."
Tsubaki spoke up while we were waiting for the worlds to finish their acceleration, causing me to glance over.
What is it, Tsubaki?
Where is the underworld located? She asked, a curious look in her eyes. I have always been curious about this. The underworld connects all worlds, but I have never found it within the void. Is it simply too far away for me to locate in the void, or is there another answer? I blinked, not sure how to answer that. In fact, I myself didn't know where the underworld was located. Thankfully, someone else did, and she came to my rescue.
The underworld does not exist within the void in the first place, strictly speaking, that is.
Lady Irena, Tsubaki quickly turned, bowing towards the winged goddess as she made her way over. A small smile tugged at Irena's lips, and she shook her head.
You don't need to use that title with me, Tsubaki. I won't stop you if you insist, like Aurevi, but I want you to be comfortable here.
Tsubaki simply nodded her head.
You, more than most. As you are the wife of my keeper, I must maintain the proper respect.
Irena's smile grew a touch wider at that, and she moved to sit down next to me.
As I said, the underworld isn't in the void. Rather, it is a third layer of existence. Its name, as the underworld, is actually rather apt.
Irena waved a hand.